inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London this past weekend. To see the first hour of our TV radio global exclusive, go to democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, John Hamilton, and Dennis Moynihan. I'll be speaking in Hartford, Connecticut, July 21st at the Mark Twain House and Museum at 7 p.m. and on July 26th in Martha's Vineyard. Check democracynow.org for details. A fond farewell to our treasured fellows, Tarina Nadura and Cassandra Lazaire. We wish you the very best for your oh-so-promising futures. Democracy Now! Is hiring. We have openings for administrative director and fall internships. Check our website. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzar, Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield, Messiah Rhodes. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater proudly present Nightmares on Wax Live, playing at the Clinton Street Theater as a benefit for KBOO Thursday, July 10th at 7 p.m. Performance comes from a sold-out show at The Refuge in Portland on Thanksgiving evening 2013. If you are one of the lucky ones who made it in, there's a good chance you are on the video. If you missed the show that night, this is a rare peek into a high-energy performance from DJ Ease and the Nightmares on Wax old band. That's Nightmares on Wax live, playing at the Clinton Street Theater, July 10th at 7 p.m. Go to kboo.fm for more information.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Will Levinson, whose life work is getting more Portlanders to embrace the Willamette River, to clean it up and to enjoy it. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
It's 8:03 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host sitting in, Lisa Loving, and today we're live in the studio with Will Levinson and the Human Access Project. This is what they have to say. Wouldn't it be great if everyone in Portland could actually get into the Willamette River, simply stroll down to the water's edge, wade out into it and swim or paddle around to their heart's content in a safe public area? It's time we did something about that, and that's what the nonprofit organization Human Access Project is all about. Will, thanks for being back on the air with us.
Thank you, Lisa. It's always fun to visit. I'm so happy that you're back in your seat. You have such a talent for for this community interaction. So
yakking. Here, take your microphone and push it down a little. It's a little too high. Oh, there he goes. Cool.
Okay.
This is,
how's this?
If you're listening, this is live radio. Maybe. This is not intercom. Not that intercom's always bad, but I'm putting that out. So we've had Will on the air for ever since you started the mm-hmm. the big float, mm-hmm. and your work has grown a lot. So the signature event, I'm calling it that, the big float, it's coming up July 27th.
Correct.
Is that a Saturday?
It's a Sunday.
Sunday, July 27th. And that's where people get into big inner tube rings and float across the river in a big group of 1,000, 2,000 people, a couple thousand people.
We're shooting for 3,000 this year. We don't cross the river. We stay on the west side.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first year we floated all the way across.
First couple years we floated across, but after we had a safety meeting after the second year event with our partners with Multnomah County River Patrol, and I really do appreciate that relationship, and it's been just a really satisfying example of how, you know, it is really interesting to start, I mean, to start a new not-for-profit, you know, and be an unknown entity. I mean, particularly law enforcement, I totally understand what they'd be suspicious of, like, who these people are who want to inner tube on the Willamette. Mm-hmm. But I just had a safety meeting with Multnomah County River Patrol and Fire Department and Coast Guard's
involved.
Yeah, and it was just cool. I mean, I think one of, on a personal level, I just, it's kind of the simple thing I try to strive for in life is earning the benefit of the doubt. It's such a powerful thing, and if you don't have the benefit of the doubt, you know, it really sucks. And sometimes, I mean, without getting too far off course, I mean, I think certain minorities know what it feels like to not have the benefit of the doubt when people just look at you and judge you before they get to know you. And that's totally unfair and lame, and hopefully our society is progressing and progressing. But ultimately, to the extent, hopefully people can more and more get past that, it's nice to be able to earn the benefit of the doubt of somebody. So,
and what you're really saying is trust.
Trust,
what you're basically
correct.
Saying is earning people's trust. And this issue of, you know, the first time we had you on the air, and I couldn't believe it. Like, you contacted me over and over and said, no, I'm trying to get people to jump into the river. I'm like, no, I don't want three arms. I've got two. That works for me. Mm-hmm. I thought that was crazy. And now, has it been 3 years? And we see that no one has sprouted a third arm or a fourth eye or anything like that. It is about trust. And the other thing that you guys are doing. By the way, last year you did establish the world's record for the biggest number of people in floating rings.
Correct. The most people in a floating line, yes,
right.
Which I appreciate your help with too, Lisa. Yes.
I got to be the Guinness World Record, one of the Guinness World Record judges on that. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And so now you started this week with a river huggers group that are swimming across the Willamette and back in a pod of people with an inflatable craft alongside for safety.
Right.
And I saw the picture, so it's going to be, it's Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. before work, right?
Correct.
And you need to be a good swimmer. But when I saw the picture of those people that had done the swimming come back, I feel like it's a multiracial group of people, and they looked psyched.
Yeah, there's a kid who came who looked like he was probably around, right around 18. But it was a fun group of people.
It was
sure.
A couple dozen people, was it? How
it
many?
Was, first group was 15. So we're going to be swimming. And the idea of the River Hugger Swim Group, swim team, is that it's kind of, the idea is like a critical mass swim on the water. So I try to instruct people before we swim that we really want to stay in a pod. It's not about coming in first. It's about having a presence on the water. So when people are commuting, they look down and say, hey, whoa, what are those people doing in the water? And that, at least, hopefully, it's a conversation starter to help people. A lot of what we do with Human Access Project is try to coax people to consider the relationship with the Willamette River, why they feel that way, and to encourage them to do just the most cursory amount of research on the water quality, because people in Portland will be relieved to know that although there is a lot of work that needs to be done, that the water quality is safe for people to swim in most times of the year.
In certain parts, it's better than other parts. Certain parts of the river, it's better than other parts. And you're not going to probably go in like at the foot of the Fremont Bridge on the east side. You're probably not going to do that. So you're paying attention to exactly where you're going in. And the other thing I do want to point out to people is there are already people swimming in the Willamette, I believe, Kelly Point Park, right?
Sure. Yep. There's swim beaches on the Willamette in Portland. You got Selwood's a really nice place to swim. Kelly Point Park is a really nice place to swim and access the river's edge. Human Access Project, our passion, where we really want to see people get into the water is downtown Portland. So that to us is where the core of everybody is working. It's all our transit system is designed to ship people downtown. You know, Savvy's Island is in Portland, I believe. So that is technically a Portland beach. But I mean, to get to Savvy's Island, you have to go over the bridge. Parking's a nightmare. It's all dusty. And it's interesting because people do like swimming at Savvy's Island and feel like that's acceptable, yet they think the idea of swimming in downtown Portland is gross. I would just say to those people, continue to swim at Savvy's Island. It is a really nice place to swim. But for your own consideration, Savvy's Island is downstream from a Superfund site and the confluence of the Columbia and the Willamette. So if water quality was your issue, principal issue, you would probably prefer to swim in downtown Portland to Savvy's Island.
Hmm. And so is it this week that you inaugurated Poets Beach?
Just yesterday. Yes.
Tell us about this. So this is a group of volunteers that got together and just like critical mass to beach out there. And I like that use of the phrase critical mass because we all remember our beloved bicycle movement 10 years ago, which really angered a lot of people just by drawing attention to the need for bike safety and bikes and a bike community in downtown Portland. The critical mass doesn't happen anymore, but it is a concept. So talk about the beach you guys made.
Right. So Human Access Project, the biggest feedback point we got for them the first 3 years of the big float was that it's very difficult to get into the water at the put-in, which is underneath the Markham Bridge. So we agreed. I mean, there's a nice sandy beach underneath the Markham Bridge, but there is no safe way to get to it. And the principles of Human Access Project in Portland of what a human access point is very simply, one, a sign that says this is a place you can get to the water's edge. Two, a path that courts and invites you down to the water's edge. And then three, a human habitat. So the idea is that if you consider why you might be more interested in swimming at Savvy's Island in downtown Portland, my feeling is that it's because Savvy's Island is a human habitat. It looks like a place that humans would want to hang out. So for example, if you want birds to hang out in your yard, you put up bird baths and bird feeders and native plants and all of a sudden birds show up. If you want humans to hang out at the water's edge, you need to create a human habitat, which is similar to maybe what Savvy's Island feels like. So with the concept of that in mind, we got permits from the Army Corps of Engineers, Human Access Project, pulled the permits from Army Corps of Engineers, Department of State Lands. This was done by our volunteer board. Andy Jansky from Flowing Solutions is an engineer who donated his time to pull the permit with those two agencies. Mike Fea, principal of Greenworks, top landscape architecture firm in Portland, he provided renderings for the permit process. And then we had funding from Oregon Wild, Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, who's a very important partner of Human Access Project, Wildwood Mahonia, and Human Access Project picked up the difference. And what we did was cut 2 5-foot chunks of the basalt rock. If anybody out there has done the big float, the concrete path that goes directly into the water is lined by big chunks of basalt rock. So what we did was simply cut into 2 of the 5-foot chunks of basalt so it's level with the concrete path. And then we made a trail from the concrete path directly to the beach. And then to make the place more of a place, we partnered with an organization called Honoring Our Rivers, who has brought poetry and art to the Willamette River watershed for the last 14 years to children's classrooms. And they selected 30 excerpts of poems, which we inscribed on top of the rocks that lead to the path to the beach. And then the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde provided us 11 Chinook words. So we put in the Chinook word, the English phonetical pronunciation, and the English translation. So we'll have a chance to learn 11 new words from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. Because Human Access Project feels just as strongly that Portland is thirsty for a relationship with the Willamette River and does not realize it yet. We feel like Portland is also thirsty for the culture that the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde can provide this community and are not aware of it yet. So by being able to make this small little connection with the words, it's kind of fun. You know, you learn how to say frog and salmon, and Tillicum, of course, is represented. So I'm really proud of it. I mean, it's turned into this really cool public art project, and we had the grand opening yesterday, and Anushka, who now is an eighth grader, had one of her fourth grade poems on the rock. And ultimately for me, it's kind of turned into too, is this is a way to cultivate children expressing themselves. I mean, children and adults all need platforms to express themselves. And I think it's really powerful for any kid who's participating in this program to be able to write a poem and have these people say, well, you never know what will happen to your art once you create it. It might wind up in a public space. So hopefully that will encourage kids to continue their art of expressing themselves, just writing words on a piece of paper, even if it's just for themselves.
All right. And callers, look, reclaiming the Willamette River with our whole bodies. That's what we're talking about doing. When was the last time you jumped into the river, callers? 503-231-8187. You know, a few years ago, we did this show for the first time, and people just kept calling and calling in their large numbers saying, you're crazy, I would never do it. And a couple people called and said, I do it all the time. And I run and take a shower. And then the next year, more people said, yeah, I do that. We really want to hear from you, callers, about your relationship with the Willamette, specifically the Willamette. 503-231-8187. Sometime in the future, somebody should be doing a show about the Columbia, because a lot of stuff's happening about the Columbia River as well.
Columbia River Keeper does amazing work too.
They do. And so does the Willamette River Keeper, everybody. And a lot of stuff has gone down actually about the oil shipments down through the trains and the boats through the Columbia. We are talking about taking the baby step of reclaiming the Willamette River right now. And I did the big float. I couldn't believe how beautiful was the water. The water smelled good. It did not have garbage in it. Years ago, I'm going to say in 2000, so that's almost 15 years ago, I got to take a tour of the Willamette River at that time with the Willamette Riverkeeper at that time, and there was all kinds of garbage in the river. There was, you could see it.
Don Francis?
It was Don Francis, and he showed me the places like the Marsan dock, like some of these corporate docks, where there was one place he showed me, this was 15 years ago, where there was a gigantic pile of white powder right off the river, and it was flowing into the river. What was it? I can't even remember what that stuff was, but he got on the phone to the Coast Guard, you know, and got the Coast Guard out there. It's taken the work of many, 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 many people to even begin to think about how to clean up the Willamette. And one thing, I'm just going to challenge listeners right now. One thing that I see, especially with people on the left end of the spectrum, is we don't always want to accept when we have victories. If we don't figure out when we've had a victory, we can't see when there's success in what we're doing to try to make the world a better place. Anyway, we're talking about the Willamette River. We're talking about the Human Access Project. We're talking about jumping into the river, and we want to hear your river story. 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller. We have Sheila on the phone. Sheila, what's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you for answering. Actually, I don't have a story. I have a question, which I'm very concerned about, me and my dog going in the river, particularly in Selwood. And I'm wondering if you could give me a very, very brief lowdown of the pollution.
Sure. I mean, I am not a toxicologist. That's really not what Human Access Project does primarily. But I'd recommend going to the Bureau of Environmental Services webpage, do a search for Willamette River water quality. There's also a link to their website on the bigfloat.com homepage. But I have come to be, although I'm not an expert, I've probably come to know more than the typical person about these things. And what I'd say is that the principal risk to human health in the Willamette River water column right now is E. coli. And there's more and more going to need to be discussions about, you know, dog feces and geese in, you know, Selwood Park. I know that will primarily be your biggest issue. But before you go out, there's weekly water quality tests that are done by the Bureau of Environmental Services.
The City of Portland, and they're posted. They're posted every day, actually.
Oh, are they really every day? Okay.
I believe so. Or maybe it's three times a week. So they totally keep up on that.
They don't do. Mess I think with it might be weekly in the summertime.
All right.
But still, I mean, it'll give you a pretty good idea of the water quality. And right now, the last time I checked the test, they're well below actionable levels.
So, Sheila.
Yeah, my main concern, excuse me, is, well, there's radioactivity. And then there's just the fact that the Willamette comes to us through all of this ag land that, you know, is dumping chemicals, et cetera, into water.
Sheila, there's no radioactivity in the Willamette River. You're thinking of the Columbia.
That's true.
The Columbia, so it doesn't. No, that's cool, though. That's the whole thing. And Sheila, I really appreciate your call, because we are so we're so cynical about the water, basically.
Right.
And
yeah.
And it's sometimes it's hard to begin to break that down and get past it. You know, and even like I said, you know, we've paid so much of our tax dollars right. into the big pipe. Oh my God, that yeah. cost a lot of money. But also the bioswales. You know how conservatives in this town, they complain about the bioswales. What is that? It's the things that they're building in your neighborhood so that the storm runoff doesn't go into the river, right? There's one on my street.
It adds capacity for the big pipe. So, I mean, most of those, I would guess majority of those bioswales aren't runoff that would go directly into the Willamette, but it would have gone into our combined sewer system. So by having the water stay in the bioswales, it helps prevent combined sewage overflows, which is why the big pipe was installed. But if I could say too, I mean, I think a big part of the psychology of the sensitivity of Portland with the Willamette, I mean, there's a lot of oral history to overcome, which I completely understand. I mean, it used to be after a tenth of an inch of rain, raw sewage would flow directly into the Willamette. It would happen over 100 times a year. It is disgusting. But since the big pipe was completed in November 2011, we've only had a total of 10. We haven't had one in the summertime. And, you know, the more green infrastructure projects we put in place, it'll add greater capacity to the big pipe and be less likely to be sewage overflows in the future. But ultimately for me, just in terms of the relationship that I think Portland generally has with the Willamette River, is I think when any human, particularly a Portland human, acknowledges that they had some role in screwing up the Willamette River and then turns their back to it and says, well, that's too bad, there's nothing we can do about it. That human has forfeited a part of their soul. Period.
Wow. Sheila, let me ask you a question. What do you wish, where do you wish you could take your dog? What kind of place are you looking for? What kind of dog do you have?
Well, she's a lab, so she loves water.
Hey.
And just somewhere where I could feel that. And I still am kind of concerned about what's coming to us, you know, from the ag land where they do use water.
Yeah, I mean, I encourage you to do some research. I mean, according to DEQ, EPA, Oregon Health Authority, City of Portland, both local riverkeeper organizations, the water is perfectly safe to swim in as long as there's not a sewage overflow present. It's mostly an E. coli thing. At this point, I mean, it's in order to really get comfortable with the water, it's going to require everybody to become kind of a little bit of a mini Willamette River expert. But it's worth it. I mean, it's a good opportunity to learn a little more about the Willamette. A lot of people don't know the Willamette River has tidal effects from the Pacific Ocean. So on any given day, there's tides. I think that's super cool. Willamette Falls, it's the second largest waterfall by volume in the United States. That's pretty neat. That's just right up in Oregon City. It's pretty cool. There's a lot we need to start learning and loving about the river that goes through the middle of our town.
Hey, Sheila, too. I pulled up this thing by there's a woman named Cassandra Profita, and she's a reporter for Oregon Public Broadcasting, and I admire her so much. And she does what's called the Ecotrope blog. And several years ago, she did a story about how dirty is the Willamette really. And I just want to read a little bit of it. From it for you right now. It was updated last year, right? And she's saying, you know, she says, I wanted to investigate the claims of the Willamette River Keeper that the river is really not that dirty anymore. The River Keeper also takes people into the river. So if you love the Willamette, check out the Willamette River Keeper. They do the same kind of thing. They do wonderful things. So Cassandra Profita is writing, I wanted to investigate this claim a bit before I consider jumping in on Sunday. I talked with water quality officials at the Environmental Protection Agency, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and Oregon Bureau of Environmental Services. Here's what I learned. All three agencies agree the river is safe for swimming as long as there has not been a combined sewer overflow within the past 48 hours. That conclusion is based on two basic facts. One, E. coli bacteria are well below health hazard levels. Two, all other potentially health-threatening toxins are way below the levels at which a swimmer would be affected. And what you're talking about, that agricultural runoff, which really choked the river for generations, it did. It's by the time it gets to where we are, it's what do you say? It's diluted. So, but you're right. Of course, we're all looking at what's happening with the toxins, and you should also consider that when you're jumping into any of the rivers in Oregon
or in pools. I mean,
swimming pools, chlorine.
Right. I mean, it kind of cracks me up sometimes because I mean, if you go into the wrong overchlorinated pool. And, you know, everybody in parks does their best, but there's kids doing it. And sometimes pools will get overchlorinated. I mean, sometimes you walk out of a pool, or not even Portland parks, not to dish on them, any 24-hour fitness, whatever, and you come out and your hair just smells disgusting.
It
your skin
green.
Is totally dried
yeah.
out. And somehow that's acceptable. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of interesting. People are extremely sensitive about rivers, and I totally get that. But yeah, it is. It's good news is that we can now begin to call ourselves actual green citizens. I mean, people in Portland really love to pride themselves on being green, but ultimately, what does it mean to be a green citizen of Portland? For, you know, there's a lot of people who make jokes about the water quality of the Willamette River. I mean, for me, if you consider yourself a green citizen, you're outraged and you wanted to improve it, that would maybe reconcile. But I think the fact that so many people make jokes about it is because that people are so uncomfortable with the subject, it's easier to subordinate it and make jokes about it rather than reconsider this relationship they had with the Willamette. Because at the point people turned their back to it and walked away and they kind of lost a little bit of their soul.
Trust.
It's kind of a dark place to revisit. So, yeah. I mean, you have to, it takes a certain amount of guts to even explore, to do the cursory research to get comfortable with it. But Portland is about to change in a very significant way and become a lot more fun in the summertime. It's going to add a big helping heap, big helping spoon of quality of life.
All right.
So, yes.
Sheila, thank you for calling. And
thank you so much for being there. Yeah, I really appreciate all of you. So,
please, yeah, call
so
again sometime.
Time.
So we are live on the air with Will Levinson. We're talking about the Human Access Project. We're talking about all the things that local unpaid volunteers just totally out of the clear blue sky got together and made happen on the Willamette River. And so there's now a beach, Poets Beach. You can go there. You know what? You don't even have to go into the water, by the way. If you're
correct.
That paranoid about it, you could just go to Poets Beach and just lay out like you're Paris Hilton. No, don't do it like you're Paris Hilton. I don't even know. Anyway, so there's Poets Beach now. There's the River Hugger Swim Team every Tuesday and Thursday
in
morning.
July, moving to 3 days a week in August.
Okay.
And the goal is going to be to build a group to 100 River Huggers by the end of the summer. And I think the River Hugger Swim Team is going to be just as much of a monster as the big float.
By monster, he doesn't mean three eyes.
Yes.
Putting that out. And the big float coming up July 27th. That's a Sunday. And I have to say, if you're not, you should be a swimmer. You should not be someone who does not know how to swim. I will say that with the big float, you get to go in there with a big ring, so you don't have to be Olympic quality. I can swim. I'm an okay swimmer, but I'm probably not as good as I wish I were. So I'm probably not going to join the team that swims across the river, but I might aspire to doing that. And I might even go someplace where I do feel safe, like the Matt Dishman pool, and do laps just to get stronger, because I just think that's a juicy thing to aspire to. You know, I'm going to swim across the Willamette River. That sounds like the kind of thing you brag to your kids about.
Well, yeah, it's the Portland rite of passage. How can you live in this town and not have swim across the Willamette River? It's such an awesome thing to do.
I know, and I don't want to encourage people to jump in the water if you're not a strong swimmer. We really want people to be safe.
Correct.
And it's true that a teenager was pulled out of Kelly Point Park, was it this week or was it even yesterday, July 8th, because he had swum too far. He was 18 years old, a big, strong guy. He had swum out in the river at Kelly Point Park, but he couldn't make it back. So we really want people to be safe, be smart.
Well, and here's the deal, too. I mean, to me, this is the this is our opportunity to start talking about policy around swimming with parks.
Policy.
Let's not wait for there to be an accident to start having a knee-jerk reaction and having to catch up to try to put some of these policies in place. Human Access Project has done research and what it takes to put swim lines out at the few beaches that we have right now in downtown Portland. Very simple process. Really just requires permission from parks to do this.
What is a swim line? What do you mean?
So, you know, if you're in a swimming pool, there's like lane dividers. Basically, what the concept would be is to, like, say at Poets Beach or Tomacall Bowl or even Audrey McCall Beach on the east side, potentially, I would just suggest start with one, but just take a floating line that delineates an area for people to swim.
Like a big neon yellow line with a floaty things
on
it so you can see it.
Like a rope with floaty things.
Right.
Right. And what you can do from there is that with a city hall resolution, you can designate that area as a swim area, and that would give the Oregon Marine Board authority to make it illegal for powerboats to go into the area. So what I'd say is that, just so I don't want to, power boaters, I love power boating too. I have friends who have boats. So, I mean, ultimately, in terms of these policy things, it's going to come to a point with the Willamette very quickly, because the acceptance of the Willamette is going to be exponential as more and more people get in the water, because it does feel great. And it cleanses you in a lot of ways, too. I think once you get into the Willamette, it's such a relief, because you're like, wow, okay, cool. I don't have to be embarrassed about this river anymore. It's
the actually city looks awesome. Totally different from the water. I cannot say that enough. The light is different. It's weird. It's like it's the thing that you have to give yourself permission to do. You have to be safe about it. But what you're saying, well, it's all like about sharing. It's all about...
For Forest Park, for example, you have trails that are for people. You have trails that are for people and horses. You have trails that are for people, horses, and bikes. You have trails that are, you know... Horses only, maybe. I don't know. But you get what I'm saying. I mean, right. Ultimately, there needs to be some shared policy ideas developed. And now's the time to do it. I think in the same way that maybe cities have put together skate parks because people were just skating anywhere and they wanted to funnel that energy to a particular spot. If the city does not provide more direction about where people should get into the water, people are going to start creating their own banded swimming holes everywhere. I mean, we need to create some energy and some direction. It's like, this is where you should swim.
And we are live in the studio with Will Levinson talking about the Human Access Project.
And please call me Willie, too.
Okay, Willie, too.
Yes.
I'm just
Well,
kidding.
Just Willie. Willie 1.
Willie. Willie Levinson, and we're talking about the Human Access Project. We're talking about the Big Float, which is coming up July 27th. We're talking about Poets Beach, which was just dedicated yesterday, where you can go all summer long and just hang out on the beach, stick your feet in the water if you want to. You don't have to get in, but if you want to, you can. And
you can get there on your bike.
I'll
That's
be darned.
What's great. You can get there after work. You can go there on your lunch hour. You can just, you know, what a great way to break up your work day. You know, everybody bikes to work. How about you bring a spare bathing suit along and at lunchtime you jump in the river and then you go back to work? Now that is something that'll give you energy for the second half of the day.
Did you see that thing last year where I think it was in the Portland Mercury where they had a picture of this young woman jumping in a wetsuit off of one of those bridges?
Oh, the steel bridge.
I have to say it was really funny. Yeah. Even though I'm not saying, no one is at all telling anyone to jump off the steel bridge in the river. No one's telling anyone to jump off any of the Portland bridges into the river. But this girl wrote a story about how once a day she has this terrible position at the Mercury. And so she puts on her wetsuit and she goes over to the bridge and jumps in the river and swims to the shore. And they had a picture of her. It was, to be honest with you, it was brilliant. And it was sort of mass, but no one's saying you should do that. I'm going to put that out again. But there aren't that goes to what you said, though, that people are going to do their pirate thing unless and until someone establishes some sort of guidelines. And we do have a caller. By the way, the number to call, we're asking people, what's your river story? When was the last time you jumped into the river? Or what are you really scared of? A lot of American culture is all formed by fear. And so let's look at what's happening with that. 503-231-8187. And the caller is Harry?
Yes, Harry.
What's going on, Harry?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And, what I'm afraid of, and that is drowning. As you know, Oregon is a swim at your own risk state. And if you've been listening to the news the last week or two, there's been a lot of drownings.
Actually, there have been more in Washington State, but keep going. I hear you.
Yes, and here in Oregon, too. But we have these, and to bring this conversation about changing policies of maybe restricting some of these areas for swimming, like at Kelly Point Park, I mean, two rivers coming together, I mean, and these huge ships coming to and fro, you know, with, I mean, it's kind of dangerous.
Container ships and stuff, yeah.
You know? And I was wondering if they're going to change some policy of maybe changing swim at your own risk. You know.
What I hear you saying is, what about some lifeguards out there? Something like
that.
That
would be a good idea. Yes, there you go.
I have an opinion. I have an opinion on that. I mean, I'd say that, in terms of swimming, I think I like the idea of, I think that there will be a time that it will be a good idea to have lifeguards at certain beaches based on a certain number of people coming. At this point, I feel like it's really hard to justify having lifeguards just because there's just not enough people getting into the water on a regular basis yet. That'll certainly be a sign of improvement for, you know, what we're advocating for. But ultimately, I think for me, if you look at it in the context of, I mean, generally swim at your own risk, it feels like a pretty international idea to me. So, I mean, if you're at a river, And a lot of times there's not even signage and you choose to swim. You're doing it at your own risk. For me, I prefer the risk of swimming in downtown Portland when there's extreme visual surveillance of people on the bridge, people on the Esplanade, people in boats. I feel like if you're in trouble in downtown Portland swimming, you're way more likely to be able to be seen than, say, for example, if you're out in the middle of the woods and your same swim at your own risk situation, where if you happen to be, you should always swim in pairs for starters. But if you happen to be in that, make the mistake to swim off on your own in the woods with no one else around, you are in real big trouble. Versus the nice thing about where we're at with Portland's relationship with the Willamette right now is it's really crazy when you see somebody swimming in the river right now. Like, it really causes attention. So if you see somebody in the river, I think you're having some degree of visual surveillance just because of the curiosity of that act. But swimming is a risk. I mean, there's no question about that. And I mean, as we continue to get more and more people in the water, it'll be exciting when we advance to the point that we can justify having lifeguards out there.
You know what, though, Harry? I'm totally with you, though, on this issue about the fear of drowning. And I think that one thing that I think would be really super cool is if the Portland Parks, and if Portland Parks, I think it's one of the better run bureaus in the city. That's just my personal feeling about it.
Yeah.
Portland Parks, I'm a Portland Parks hugger.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were able to find the political will to really embrace this, Harry, I think that another really great thing they could do is that Portland Parks does most of the swimming lessons in this freaking town,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can take swimming lessons at any age. But it would be really great to figure out a way to wrap the swimming lesson aspect around the public beach aspect somehow. But I hear you, Harry. And also, I mean, sometimes when you look at some of the barriers that people have to learning how to swim, that is a total issue in itself. And I really appreciate you calling, Harry. And it's a pleasure.
One last question.
Sure, sure.
The word Willamette, was that the name of an Indian tribe?
Where does the name come from?
Sorry, Harry. You know, I've heard explanations before, but it hasn't stuck in my long-term memory for some reason.
I know. I'm here over here tapping into my computer to look it up, so it's going to take a minute, though.
We'll tell you, though. We'll look it up, and we'll let you know.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
You have a nice day.
You too. Right, it is. And so we are talking with Willie Levinson, Human Access Project. We're talking about all the ways that people are starting to jump up.
Thanks for your call, too, Harry. That's an important question.
It is a totally important question. And this issue specifically of African and African-American people that don't learn how to swim, and our other wonderful newcomer and refugee community folks that don't learn how to swim, we really need to reach out, because it's good for everybody. It makes everybody happy. It's a healthy thing, and we should just share joy. I'm putting that out. So we do have some callers. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Bernice on the phone. Bernice, do you know where the word Willamette comes from?
I don't have a clue. I suspect it's Indian, but you have your computer there. I'm sure you will be on top of it. Just educate us all in even more ways than we expected this morning.
What is on your mind today?
Just several things. We have a boat at the marina in downtown Portland at River Place, which we've had since 86. We have been in and out of that river. We don't have anything. I think we've gotten, in fact, more brilliant than ever. I think we're very, very smart and incredibly humble
mm-hmm.
as a result of swimming in that river. Our son has grown up there. He's now 50, but he started out swimming and on water skis when he was 16. In the river, we've been through it. We don't swim, obviously, when it's been rainy, but when it's nice weather like now. Several years ago, 2 years ago, one of the groups around here has the bridge swim.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot to mention the bridge swim.
That's this Saturday.
Okay, keep going, Bernice.
Well, 2 years ago, he swam in
it. Might be Sunday. Let me look
in that, which is a wonderful event, and mm-hmm. that's 11 miles. You're in the water all that time, and they all came out fine, and he's still swimming, and in fact, that's his profession now. He's a professional. He's runs a swim program in Montana.
What's his name?
His name is Mark.
Okay.
And so he's grown up on this river. We've been in and out of it since forever. This weekend, we had some friends down, everybody dangling their feet in the water, and
July 13th. We
did have to educate them that it's okay, that we watch the signs that they go up. I know periodically people get concerned about it when we have a huge when a huge rain.
It really takes a huge rain now.
But
what it takes is a lot of rain in a short period of time.
Yeah, and we just don't have. They've done a great job at cleaning up the river. We love it. But like I said, we've been through it for 20 years, and we're still here. We're still breathing. We don't have extra arms or legs or fins.
That's right.
Great.
If we could grow fins, that would help.
Testify.
Thanks a lot.
Not to be afraid of it. I would suggest, when you're talking about swim lessons, maybe you could get the Red Cross or somebody down here and bring people in to get lifeguard lessons.
It could be really fun to create an event where people learn how to swim, like the biggest number of people learning how to swim.
I don't know what that'd be. Get people out there who can get those people who are now swimming to come down and take some lifeguard lessons, so we could have people around who could go in and rescue if need be.
All right.
So I would urge that too. But you go out, you've got a great program, and I urge people to get out and enjoy a wonderful, wonderful river. Be safe.
Thanks a
Be
lot.
Smart.
Thanks
Bye.
For calling, Bernice. You know, before I did the big float, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, I had no idea the big community of people that live on the Willamette all the time.
Right.
There were even different kinds of watercraft that I did not know what they were and I had never seen before. And I'm not even talking about the mini stern wheeler that was out there or the inflated couches and stuff like that. But there were people that were on gigantic surfboards with a thing that you could hold on to when they were paddling. And it was amazing. You know, I feel like it's the Portland Tribune. Other publications recently have started doing articles about people who literally live on the Willamette. And some people are accusing them of maybe being homeless or Willamette hobos or something like that. But people are saying, no, this is my home. This is my boat. I live here. You know, get out of my face. And there's a whole, it's really an amazing community of people that live on the river.
Yep. And through Human Access Project, I've had a chance to get to know a lot of, they refer to themselves as live-in boaters. And ultimately, I mean, it's interesting. It's another one of those policy things. Ultimately, if people dispose of their blackwater properly, then it's not an easy life to live as a live-in boater. I mean, it's great in the summertime, but you certainly pay the price in the wintertime.
Mm.
It's an exponential version of being in Portland.
Yeah.
We think we're loving summer right now. I had a chance to visit some friends at the Blues Festival boat area, which is this totally awesome scene I knew nothing about.
It's a decades old scene.
There's like water taxis.
Legacy.
But I had a chance to speak with Captain Jack, who helps us out for the big float. He lives on his boat. And just hearing him wax poetic about how awesome the Willamette River is and how much he loves it, it's just awesome. And he's right. I mean, just the lights at night. It's an amazing life to be able to live on the river, I bet.
I also want to speak up and say, because I'm a global warming nerd, I'm a geek about it. What we're going to be seeing, and we are already seeing it now, is that in the summer we're going to have long, dry heat waves, and in the winter we're going to have monsoon-like rains. So when you're looking at recreation on the Willamette, that I just want you to keep that in mind. That's what's in the future. And we do have a whole bunch of callers now. Let's go to the phone line if we can. We've got Joanne. Joanne, what's on your mind today?
Well, since my low income, I mean, yeah, my public housing's been privatized, I've been wondering if oceans and rivers can be privatized. I'm also wondering, that's there, up there in the air, International Space Station, I wonder if they'll be watching you.
If they're watching us from the space station, that's more protection against drowning. I'm putting that out. I mean, if you're... Anyway, that is a kind of interesting to imagine what it looks like.
That's pretty cool.
From space.
We could have lifeguards in space, possibly.
It's interesting what she said, though, this idea about privatization of the water. And I hadn't heard people talk about that. But, you know, that was one of the reasons that people were worrying so much about some of these ballot initiatives.
It's a huge issue. And actually, there was unfortunately, the Portland Water Trust was a ballot initiative that a group of people tried to get going and they didn't get enough signatures. But it's going to be an emerging issue in Portland, I really believe.
Water in general.
The more there's a water crisis in California, the more they mismanage their water. It's not too far of a stretch to think that there could be a pipeline from Portland to California. I really do like the idea of applying the public trust doctrine to our water supply. I think that's a super idea, and it's a great idea to put it in place now before there's a crunch. And before you know it, our politicians are making some backroom deal whoever these politicians in the future might be, because that's the way these things happen sometimes.
It's more reason. That's the whole point that you're making, this trust issue. The more reason that people should have a direct connection to the river and feel an ownership of it and hold it in their hands and take control, basically. And it's, and there's a bunch of callers on the line. I don't want to get into this too much. Yes. Joanne had raised this issue of privatization. This issue of who controls the river is complicated. Like, there's one group that's in charge of, like,
DSL owns the bed and the banks up to the ordinary high water
DSL
line.
Is
Department of State Lands.
Right.
So the same public trust doctrine that's applied to our beaches, the Department of State Lands owns the bed and the banks of all the rivers in Oregon. So up to the ordinary high water line is owned by the state. Above it is the individual property owners.
Totally fascinating. Anyway, so let's go back to the phone lines. We have Joe on the line. Joe, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I have a suggestion. At all those access points, they ought to have a solar-powered water shower, so you shower like you do at the beaches in Southern California to rinse off the sand and the salt. That would be just a an added plus for the people that when they get out of the water, they could rinse off with a solar-powered, you know, just passive solar power for in the summertime would heat up the water to at least to the point where it wouldn't be, you know, just straight out of the pipe freezing cold.
Super
oh, and by the way, the person mentioned radiation earlier. We're still getting a boatload of radiation from Fukushima. So go check out if you love this planet.org, and you can find out directly from Dr. Helen Caldicott. But
hey, Joe, also I want to point out that if you listen to the KBOO News every night at 5, at the very end of the broadcast is the RADcast, where they tell you exactly what the radiation count is in different parts of the city and the Pacific Northwest. And Willie wants to play his guitar. I want to cycle through a couple more callers,
yeah,
and then he's going to play his guitar. By the way, there's no salt in the Willamette River, right?
That's a really interesting question. I would... you know, I don't know the answer to that. There is tidal effects, but
right,
whether or not salt
forth.
Makes it, I would say that would be very unlikely.
All right. And so let's try to cycle through the callers. We've got Sheila's back. Do we have Sheila on the line?
Oh, Sheila.
All right. I have the etymology of Willamette. It was originally, thousands of years ago, a word, W-A-L-L-A-M-T, and it meant a dwelling fishing site. It's where the Clackamas River enters the Willamette, and it was known as this wonderful place to go to get well. And then as it became changed with the white people coming in, it became known as the Valley of Sickness.
Oh, boring.
Oh, I'm sorry. But there's some argument in there, too. So the original word was changed, but originally it was a good thing.
All right. Thanks for calling and drawing the line under that. Let's go to the next caller real quick. Garrett. Garrett, is that right? Garrett,
yeah,
are you there?
Garrett.
What's going on, man?
Yes, you can hear me.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually thinking if you really, really want to get a lot of attention to people swimming in the Willamette, try and get a water slide put in.
Yeah, that's on my radar, my man. That's a very big idea. I'm working on that for the big float at least. But
all right.
Yeah, the Willamette River, it takes a lot of creativity to imagine what healthy, cool Willamette would look like from a recreational perspective. Downtown Portland is so heavily urbanized. It looks more like a canal in some places than a river, but this is an opportunity for Portland to dream about the Willamette. What the Willamette can be in the future is only limited by our imagination.
All right.
I love that idea.
Let's go to the next caller if we can. John. John, what's going on with you today?
Hi. I looked in the computer about the origin of the Willamette, and it's really fuzzy. But I did want to just say that when I first came out here, I pronounced it like everybody else, and somebody corrected me and said you can remember by remembering when Lewis and Clark came up on the bluff and saw the water. Lewis said to Clark, Willamette River.
Okay, work on that. Work on that.
Willamette
work on
River.
The delivery. Okay. All right. Thanks a ton for calling, John.
That's a joke.
I know. I'm work on it. Okay. Awesome.
My coffee hasn't fully kicked in yet.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much for calling. I know some of these issues about what things are called. As far as I know, nobody really knows the origin of the word Oregon.
Oh.
So it's which I find fascinating. So we have some clear space. We're going to have Willie Levinson play his song.
Willamette River song. So
about the river. Look out.
Yeah, look out. Please, I mean, turn down. I'm not a very good guitar player. But what the origin, the inspiration for this song was that I felt like the Willamette River needed a song. I couldn't find a song about the Willamette River. I certainly couldn't find a song that spoke to how I felt about the Willamette River at this particular point in time in Portland. So I was trying to maybe take some of the children's poetry from Honoring Our Rivers and pairing it with some musicians, and that didn't really get anywhere. And then I was on vacation in Hawaii. Luckily, Pete Seeger died. And when somebody important dies, you hear a compressed amount of information about that person's life in a short period of time. And I really got impressed with how he used, I really got inspired with how he used music as a form of advocacy for all sorts of social causes, but particularly with the Hudson River. So the next morning I woke up and said, screw it, you know what, I'm going to write a Willamette River song. And the process wound up taking me 6 months between when I just wrote the initial song down and got it recorded. And you can hear like an actually decent sounding version of it on the Human Access Project website, humanaccessproject.com. But ultimately, I'm hoping this is a starting point. And Louis Longmire, who sang on the produced version, was saying, you know, this is kind of the folk process. When there's a song that needs to, something needs to be said and there's not a song for it, you write it. And then hopefully people just sing more and more. So if you don't like this song, I encourage you to write your own song about the Willamette, because the Willamette needs more songs.
All right. So here he goes. Here he goes.
Here we go. Here we go. And I might put some commentary in here, too, to help explain what these lyrics mean.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
I fell into a dream one day of a town where I could swim and play, that loved its river just like the land, the Cascade Mountains, the coast, and microbeer.
Because we might just love microbeer more than the Willamette River in Portland. That's what that means.
Keep going.
I'm a
river hugger. Roll on, my friend, roll on. Brother, take me back to days gone by, when the Grand Ronde tribes and the salmon thrived. No dams, barges, bridges or cars, just canoes and oars and swimming under stars. I'm a river hugger, Willamette River lover. Your sparkling pride makes me come alive. Roll on, my friend, roll on. Willamette Falls are for out number two. Outside of Niagara, no one's larger than you. Would you ever guess that our river has tides, always lowest when the full moon shines so bright? I'm a river hugger, Willamette River lover. Your sparkling pride makes me come alive. Roll on, my friend, roll on. But if years from now City sing. I'm a river hugger, Willamette River lover. Your sparkling pride makes me come alive. Roll on, my friend, roll on.
All right. We are listening to Willie Levinson, Human Access Project, talking about all the ways that you can get wet in the Willamette River this summer or even just hang out on the beach. We do have a caller. Quickly, though, before we go there, somebody call while you were playing that song. Oh, Ted's on the line. All right, Ted, are you there? Come on the air.
Yes.
What's going on, Ted?
Lisa, welcome back. I wanted to know what is the precise location of Poets Beach?
To get to Poets Beach, what you would do is get to the South Waterfront Esplanade, walk south to basically get to the base of the the Markham Bridge. At the at the end of the Markham Bridge, there's kind of this cul-de-sac terminus, and there's a sign that says "Welcome to Poetry at the Beach." That would be your path that takes you down to Poets Beach, and where you can experience the poetry of the children of the Willamette River watershed.
Under the Markham Bridge.
On the Markham Bridge on the west side. Yeah, come and check it out. It's really cool.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your work.
West side. Thank you, man.
Von Huggen.
All right.
Thanks, bye-bye. Baby. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we're beginning to think about the possibility of running out of show now. We've got about 5 minutes left. And I want to give the talking stick to Will and say, okay, give us a laundry list of all the things that we have going this week and through the rest of July. And don't forget about the bridge swim now.
Right. Number one is the bridge swim. If you can have an opportunity to go out and see Marisa Frieder's great event. That's on the 13th, I believe.
We just said, yeah.
13th.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's happening this summer.
And so that's like professional swimmers who swim in a circuit that's 11 miles, 14 miles.
You go under every Portland bridge. And I mean, Marisa has some vetting before she allows you to do the whole 11 miles. But I think there's like 55 participants. And then
they come from all over the country, all over the world.
Yeah, it's an awesome event. And then there's a relay with 25 participants, I think, who swim the three participants per relay team. But super cool. So come downtown and cheer them on.
And I feel like last year they came ashore during the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival.
Right.
I don't know that that's right. The case this year. But so it interacts with other events.
But other events. Does this inspire you? Would you like to be a part of helping create beaches in downtown Portland? This Saturday, it just so happens, now that you've learned through this Willamette River song that the river has tides, always lowest when the full moon shines so bright. Well, it just so happens that this Saturday we're having a super moon, which means we're going to have a super low tide between noon and 5. So it's going to be a great opportunity to really get to the water's edge and pick up riprap rock, which has migrated down to the water's edge. And what's great about removing the riprap rock from the shoreline is that it's not only human friendly, it improves shallow water habitat because predatory fish will hide behind these larger rocks. So it improves salmon habitat. So it's great for fish and great for people. The River Hugger Swim Team, if you are an intermediate level swimmer, join us Tuesday, Thursdays in July at 7 a.m. at 1515 Southeast Water at Cooper's Coffee is where we meet. It's about a 45-minute swim. We have River Hugger Swim Team swim caps. We ask for a $10 contribution to the cause for the printing of the swim caps and to support the 100% volunteer work of Human Access Project. The big float is going to be coming up July 27. We are going for 3,000 river huggers, river lovers on the Willamette this year.
So fun, I'm saying, so fun.
And it's become a very important platform for advocacy. So if you guys like Poets Beach, big floaters, that happened because of you, because you were able to come out and sit on your butt and show Portland that the Willamette River is important to you and river access is important to you. You big floaters have provided a platform for advocacy for Human Access Project. So this is the world's laziest revolution. You can make a difference simply by getting on your butt and floating or swimming. And so take a part. You know, this is something that is going to be a winning cause. And we really would love to have your support.
All right. And, you know, it looks like it looks like there's another caller coming in, but I don't know if we've got the time to take that caller. So if people... Well, we're just about to close out this show, but I just want to put this out there. Looking at the river, looking at how we live our lives today, looking at how much money we all do not have, right? This is one thing you can do that it really doesn't cost a lot of money.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can get yourself to the river, you can plunge in for free.
Should consider having some sort of flotation device and putting that out.
Absolutely. I mean, always swim with pairs. It's a really good idea to go with river shoes for sure. But Human Access Project is on Facebook. Like us there, thebigfloat.com, humanaccessproject.com.
All right, that's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Willie Levinson, with the Human Access Project. Find out more about their work at humanaccessproject.com. At Portland Bridge Swim at portlandbridgeswim.com. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser, Sky the studio dog in the sky, okay? This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Good morning. Coming right up this morning, up next, Political Perspectives. The 20-year-old cousin of a 16-year-old Palestinian boy who was set on fire and burned to death by right-wing Israelis speaks about her cousin's death and the aftermath. At 9:30, we'll hear Economic Update with economist Richard Wolff talking about General Motors. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the attorney for the Andy Lopez family responds to the Santa Rosa's DA decision not to prosecute. A report from a doctor in the Gaza Strip after days of Israeli bombing, and a report on the expanding Israeli vigilantism against Palestinians living inside the Green Line. And at 11, Glenn Andresen hosts The Dirtbag. He and guest Jim Gilbert discuss the bud graft method for building fruit trees. They also talk about when and how to pick fruits and veggies at their peak. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. It is 1 minute past 9 a.m., and you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. And now I have a message before we go to Political Perspectives.
KBOO wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KBOO reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KBOO's Board of Directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st.